The following program is paid for by Little John Financial Services. The opinions and views expressed may not reflect those of Brook Communications, its affiliates, or its employees.
This is KQEN Local Talk at 4. Every weekday, News Radio 1240 KQEN brings you local information at 4 o'clock. Now it's True Wealth, presented by Little John Financial Services. Here is David Littlejohn with True Wealth on News Radio 1240 KQEN.
All right, welcome to the True Wealth Show, gang. We are stoked to have you here. It's the best Tuesday you've had all week. And you know what, Matt? They tried to get sneaky on me. They didn't have the volume sliders up on the board.
Uh-oh.
I know, it would have been like a, why is there no sound on the True Wealth Show? But nope, we saw past their trick and went straight to the treat. Welcome to the show.
I'm glad I'm not in your seat. I would have missed it. And then like 5 minutes later, someone would come running in like, dude, no one can hear you.
No, you totally catch on. And there's lots of buttons and you only push like three of them.
I've got the easy key. Job. I just sit here and talk.
And hang out, right? It's good stuff. Well, you know what? I've got to say, we've got funny stuff to talk about today. Not the least of which is, this is a fun one on air, right? Like, how long am I going to keep being wrong about Tesla?
Until you're not. How about that?
I mean, this... I don't really feel bad about this, by the way. We've had clients that have said, like, well, why don't we own Tesla? And my answer... Let me frame this up just for a second, right? This is one of those where, like, the old Norelco commercials, I liked it so much I bought the company, right?
Mm-hmm.
So we have an investment firm, right? So actual investment advisors on air here. Why don't you hear that often? Well, because there's a lot of rules and regulations about what you can and can't say on the radio. And so it nerve-wracks attorneys. And they're like, we can't let you just speak live. You'll say something dumb. To which I would say, that's highly probable.
Especially when I'm on the radio.
But will we say something litigious? Now that's the catchy one, right?
Ah.
So I just want to remind everybody listening that when we talk about stuff, I'm not talking about this for the sake of it being investment advice. We're talking about we're learning together and so forth. If you want investment advice, that's when you call the office. Now, that's because we do have a financial planning firm. We don't try to pitch it on the radio much. Mm-hmm. And believe it or not, that's not our thing. Is if you need help and you're searching for somebody, if you've got a great relationship in your life with somebody who's qualified, that's fantastic. If you don't, then yeah, reach out to us. Then we'll, you know, we're delighted to see if it's a good fit. But here's what I'm really getting to is we didn't buy Tesla as an investment in any of the strategies that we built, right?
And that's fair.
Yeah, we manage money and the question is why? And I've come on the show and I've talked about it before. It's just it's in the news, right? Elon Musk as the majority shareholder and I believe still CEO of Tesla,
mm-hmm.
is like you know what he reminds me of?
What?
Steve Jobs.
Oh, absolutely.
Right?
There's so many.
Not the personality or the politics or anything else, because they're actually quite different.
I'm talking about the Steve Jobs release.
Yeah. Yeah. Like, Steve Jobs was this celebrity CEO. He was the guy that started the jeans and black turtleneck thing, right? I swear that his showing up at an Apple conference sold Gap clothing.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
And so it was this huge deal back in the 2000s, right? That the first decade of the new millennium, it was like all Apple. And Apple's still done great. But since he passed away, there was all these questions about, well, what happens next? Now, I am not advocating for anything bad to happen to Elon Musk. But there's this celebrity aura that comes with Elon.
Oh, right? For sure.
And he passed Jeff Bezos when Tesla has been on this big rally the last few weeks, and he became the world's richest man.
I mean, look at what Elon Musk was able to do to, like, Dogecoin and Bitcoin with just a tweet.
Yep.
You know what I mean? Like, that guy can tweet something, and then millions of dollars are moved around just off of a little tweet.
Possibly billions.
Yeah, I mean, it's insane.
So this incredible influence—
icon.
And what I appreciate is he's got this sort of I call it charming snark, right? Because he literally just sort of thumbs his nose or flips the proverbial bird, frankly, to a lot of the institutional elements that are just absurd. Mm-hmm. You know, he will just point stuff out. It's like, well, that's just stupid. You know, California is going to shut down and we can't build our cars, but they're going to complain that we can't deliver the cars. It's like, I'm done dealing with you.
Yeah, we're going to Texas. Yeah.
Yeah. Like we're done here.
Did you see his Saturday Night Live appearance?
Yes. He's a terrible actor, but he's still charming because
of
it.
Yeah, exactly.
So anyway, the thing about Tesla is it's really hard for me to call it an investment.
Yeah.
Okay. It's like it's hard for me to call Bitcoin an investment, but it doesn't mean it's not legitimized or mm-hmm. becoming more legitimate. It's one of these things where it's new frontier stuff and it's more of a popularity contest, as best I can tell, than it is something that makes financial sense.
I mean, do you want to jump into talking about the PE ratio with Tesla at all? I mean, I think it's worth talking about.
So here, you tap dance. I'm going to bring it up live. I want to pull up the PE ratio real quick for Tesla. So just hang on a sec. We actually have the technology. And the great thing is you can look this up too. It's available all over. I'm going to go to Yahoo Finance. Right?
Yep.
And I'm just, the ticker symbol is TSLA. Tesla, by the way, had a bummer day today. It was down a little over 3%. But right now, if you look at the PE ratio, take a guess at where it is, Matt.
I'm going to go just 330.
Okay, 382.76. Now, what does this mean for our listeners? Like, what does the PE ratio just generically tell us?
Like
really
high
level.
The price to earn a dollar, I guess.
Right. Yeah, it's price of the stock to the earnings. So what is the value of the stock compared to a dollar of earnings from the company?
Yeah.
So what this tells me as an investor is, what, I need to pay over $382
to
get a dollar of earnings from Tesla.
Mm-hmm.
Now, let's do...
we need to put that in comparison to another company.
So what else would you like to compare it to? Let's start with Ford, right? There's a...
Okay.
Ford's another vehicle company.
Yep.
Okay? And the Ford PE ratio is 25.26.
That is just shocking.
It's shocking, right? I mean,
when
Tesla is what? That's what? I'm trying to do math in my head here. It looks like 11 times more. Is that? No, it's worse than that.
It's more than that. Yeah,
12, almost 15 times higher multiple than Ford.
Yeah.
So you're paying 100% more for a dollar of earnings from Tesla than from Ford.
Yeah, that's...
Now, people will say, yeah, that's not a fair comparison because Apple... I'm sorry, because... Yeah, now I just... All right, Easter egg. Right?
Apple.
So, because,
yeah, what's Apple?
Well, so Ford is a car company. Tesla's not a car company. Tesla's a technology company. So
sure, compare it to the...
case, let's look at Apple, right?
Yeah, look at them.
Apple, we talked about Steve Jobs.
Well, let me guess, 15.
26.74.
Okay, so really close to Ford.
Similar to Ford.
Yeah.
So you're going, well, is it a car company or a tech company? They go, I don't know what it is, but I know that the valuation is outlandishly high by traditional measures. So here's what you have to think about. Like, either Tesla is priced in such a strange way that we have to be able to say that Tesla needs it. It can grow dramatically. Like Tesla
sure.
can grow by 15 times its current size.
And it definitely could. But.
And it could, but let's consider what that means. I mean, how many cars does Tesla sell you?
I mean, it's.
I look this up live too?
I don't know.
I'm going to ask Google, how many cars does Tesla sell? Yeah, in a year. And in 2017.
It's going to be a fraction of what?
It's about 500,000 cars in 2020. And they've been growing up. So let's say that they can do 1 million cars.
Sure. They double.
So that means that they can go to 15. They'd have to go to 15 million cars.
Mm-hmm.
Right. That doesn't sound like that much. But now let's say same question. How many cars does Ford sell a year?
Oh, man. I'm interested now.
Oh, so this one we're not seeing years. Now, Tesla showed me deliveries for the year. Ford shows me deliveries for the month.
Okay.
So
let's just times it by 12 just to make it rough.
So How many cars? So Ford sold 4.2 million vehicles in 2020.
Oh, wow.
4.2 million to Tesla's in 2020. Tesla sold, what did I tell you?
500,000, right?
500,000.
So
Ford sold 8 times more cars, but they're valued at 15 times less.
Yeah, go figure that one.
And we're not getting into like the profits and revenue,
because right.
Ford, if I go down and look at their total quarterly revenue here, let's see if I can get a number for us. They look like their revenue was, that's tricky.
What do we got?
Well, I'm sorry, that's by share. I wanted to look for total annual revenue. Okay, so 2020 so far, revenue was $127 billion, earnings of $1.2 billion. That's Ford. Tesla, this will be a fun one. Tesla so far this year, revenue $31.5 billion, earnings $721 million.
Wow.
So.
Wow.
Yeah.
So I mean, the numbers just.
$127 billion for Ford. Tesla's revenue is $31 billion. So I'm going like, how?
Yeah, the stars just don't line up here to justify this.
And here's the fun one. Apple. How much does Apple earn?
Oh, man.
Revenue? $365 billion in 2021 so far. Earnings? $94
billion. Yeah.
Versus Tesla? What, 30-something? $31 billion in revenue, I mean, and 700-something million in
like 10 times less. Yeah.
So, I, that's why I tell people I can't rationalize it as an investment. So
can you name any other company right now that has, and I, this is a hard question, but I mean, is there any other company that has a PE ratio that's that high?
You know, it's a fabulous question.
Like a really, really popular company.
So here's what I'm going to do.
Are you going to send them to break?
I'm going to totally send them to break.
You have that look in your eye. Yes. Like, now I want to know.
We're going to make the break happen. And then when we come back, we'll talk a little bit more about it. And I promise we won't stay buried in like boring numbers. There's somewhere we're going with this, but we got to get through this evil corporate profit break first. Stick around. We'll be right back. This is Dave Littlejohn.
And Matt Dixon.
And you got True Wealth on News Radio 1240 KQEN.
This is KQEN Local Talk at 4 on News Radio 1240 KQEN.
All right, gang, welcome back to the True Wealth Show. And if you have missed anything up to this point, well, you're going to have to catch the podcast. So grab it tomorrow. It'll be posted at littlejohnfs.com, and you can get caught up. I've been teasing a little bit, but not teasing, that, you know, I continue to scratch my head on Tesla. The price continues to go higher. It's trading at $1,172. And the PE ratio is 382. And if I look back on this thing, even just this year, at the beginning of the year, it was trading at $408. It got as high as $800, and I thought it was crazy back in January. And then it fell down to $500, and I thought, that's really something. And it's gone right back up through the roof again. So what does it really tell us? And you know, what have we learned about Tesla? And Matt, you asked, like, what does this tell me about other stocks? Do other stocks have crazy PE ratios like this, for example?
Yeah, and I was just sitting here on my phone during the break trying to find, like, companies that might have a higher PE ratio. And the first article I brought up, I wasn't really seeing any major companies that I recognize on that list.
It's true. I mean, even, like, Amazon, 64.
Yeah, I'm not finding anything
right
here.
Here's a fun Google test to say, you know, what company has the highest PE ratio?
Yeah, I mean,
there's a few out there that are pretty high. Let's see, they're all overseas.
I think Zoom actually has a pretty high PE ratio. Yeah, so
Zoom
has a PE ratio of 1600.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Like, that's just nuts, yeah. Right?
Zillow, there was another one. It's got a PE ratio of 145.
Yeah.
So they...
They exist,
really,
but they're
exist.
Rare.
But the idea is that if a company has a PE ratio like that, you know what has to happen? The price has to escalate radically in order for it to come Or rather, the profits have to escalate radically to grow into that number for it to make sense as a parity investment to something else. So it's implying the company has tremendous profit growth and it's pricing it in early.
Right. And investors, I think that makes a little bit of sense with Zoom. Like, they come out during the middle of the pandemic with this product that revolutionizes how we communicate, right?
Like, well, you know, my personal take on Zoom here, just like lazy way to frame it is.
And I think I know where you're going with this. You're going to say Google has a product that does what Zoom does. So,
by the way, which Zoom did you look at? Because the PE ratio I'm seeing for Zoom is 84.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Huh. Maybe.
So there's Zoom
off.
Communications on the NASDAQ, and then there's another Zoom product out there. So just be aware of which Zoom you're looking at.
Yeah.
So nevertheless, 84 is still a high multiple, but wow, not Tesla high. Here's another fun one that has been a. How about AMC? You remember that one? Or GameStop? Let's look at those two. AMC has no PE ratio. And you know why that is? Because they're losing money.
Yeah.
No revenue. Right. And so there actually is no revenue in that one. You're betting the farm that it's going to somehow make money down the
road. Yeah. I mean, I thought for a moment there they were right on the verge of closing up and filing bankruptcy and being done.
Yes, they were.
And I don't know. I mean, has something changed? I know they got some funding.
And look, GameStop also, no PE ratio.
Really?
Yep, really.
It's just complete meme.
Yeah, that is
it's just a complete meme stock.
Now, here's the issue that people need to understand. There's a difference between investing and speculating.
And gambling.
Right? Or gambling. And then there's also, I'll call them structural exploits.
Sure.
Okay? So a structural exploit is, it's not an arbitrage, but that's another example. Like, if I could borrow money at one rate and reinvest it at a higher rate and immediately make the difference between the two, that spread is my arbitrage, right? That's the difference. But a structural issue, and that we talked about with GameStop, the structural issue had to do with the fact that
just the number of shorts on it.
Yeah, there were like, when you short more shares than exist.
Right.
Right. Or if you short so many shares and then you have a group of people that refuse to sell, so they won't make the shares available for the market makers to work with.
Yeah.
It creates a supply-demand imbalance. And if in this case the supply of stock is way too low for the demand of contractual obligations to buy it, the price goes way up.
Mm-hmm.
And that's kind of what happened, is people got caught with the balance sheet, not the balance sheet, I should say, the order book, right? The trading flow of the market makers. Too many people had written options contracts and obligated the stock when they didn't have the stock to back it up. And so that created this supply-demand gap.
Yeah.
And somebody recognized it and exploited it. And then it also, the public got in on it. And then the apes or gorillas got in on it too. That was the retail market went nuts. So anyway, it's all relevant here. Because when I laugh about Tesla, I mean, I'm going, yeah, I can't make sense of the PE ratio that high, but who cares, right? This is an example of, like, the market comes up with these different ways to rationalize the price of something, but that's all it is. It's rationalization, right? Yeah. And guess what? Market participants didn't care. They bid it up anyway. Like, apparently people don't care that Tesla's got astronomical PE ratios because we've reached, like, you've heard me say this before, like, what's the market theory behind Tesla right now?
I don't remember your, what's your phrase here? What's your phrase?
The bigger fool theory.
That's right. That's right.
What's the bigger fool?
Yeah.
Right. And it just means that I may be the fool to buy it, but there's a bigger fool that will buy it for me for more later.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. This is a dangerous game to play.
Have you seen, history has a tendency to repeat itself. Have you seen this before?
Oh, buddy.
I'm guessing you've seen it many times.
I've seen it before. Here's the thing. I'm now dating myself enough that when I first started in the industry, and this was not a second career for me. This is a right out of school career.
Uh-huh.
But I remember the 1990s.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember
the internet craze.
The internet and dot-com scenario where there was a time when people said it was called the new economy, and companies...
Which it kind of was, but...
Well, I mean, it was certainly a new technology, but what people said was the old rules don't apply. Companies don't have to make money. They have to get more users. That was virtual real estate. And
that eventually
eyeballs.
The money would follow the user count.
Yeah. And I mean, that turns out to be true for some of the modern day big tech, but it was not true ultimately during the dot-com era. It was
right.
sort of smoke and mirrors, if you will. And so when companies started showing how much revenue they had relative to their customers, eventually investors figured out the emperor had no clothes, and we had this massive market correction in 2000 and 2002.
What was the correction like?
The NASDAQ fell over 80%.
Can you imagine?
I don't have to imagine.
Yeah.
I was there.
Ugh.
Right?
That's
and,
brutal.
And the S&P 500 fell something like close to 50%. I mean, it was a really significant beatdown. And the beatings continued for over a year. And then the market sort of bottomed out. And around 2003, it got some traction and started recovering. And then we had a big run-up, and where money moved was out of the market and into real estate, and that drove the next real estate bubble that really jammed things up in 2008.
Of all the investments that just, like, haven't made sense to you, like, Tesla doesn't make sense, right? Like,
right.
Would you say that Tesla is the one that's lasted the longest at the elevated P-E ratio that you've seen? Like, have you seen companies last longer at that level?
Well, I mean, Amazon.
Yeah.
I mean, Amazon's done really, really remarkable things and grown and grown and grown. And for the longest time had no earnings.
Right.
And I mean, it's totally relevant. It's top five in the planet for market cap. And it's huge.
Mm-hmm.
And it's everywhere. Right.
Yeah.
So I would say that Amazon deserves to be in that conversation. But let me be clear. I'm not really trashing Tesla. What I'm using is this is an illustration of how all of the analysis in the world doesn't mean that something will behave the way the numbers indicate it should behave.
Sure.
Right? When I say we couldn't make sense of the risk and reward associated with that position, that's what I mean. It's like, well, I looked at how all the numbers play out, and you know, I don't know how to make the risk or reward make sense, and our investors don't hire us just to make maximum profit and risks be damned.
Exactly.
That's not what they do. So we had to look at the risk and reward and what made sense. And so I'll tell you, I mean, I think the cars are awesome.
Oh, yeah.
Right? I mean, I don't know about the quality control and so forth, but electric vehicles, they're not, that's not a purist vehicle. I get it.
Mm-hmm.
Like internal combustion, if you really like the sound and the feel and this, I mean, there are cars that drive better than Tesla. Not a lot of them faster, but they're better driver experience.
Sure.
But I like gadgets, and I think it's awesome to drive like a cell phone. It's mm-hmm. really cool with all the bells and whistles that it has.
I think like what Ford has going, though, like I think they're catching up to Tesla like really quickly.
They're all over the place. You know, we have a whole different set of problems to really look at.
Mm-hmm.
And so Tesla was... Consider it like the tip of the spear
sure.
for creating a new marketplace. And my hat goes off to Elon Musk for taking massive risks. And it goes off to Elon because he gets a lot of credit. I mean, the engineers and all the people that make it happen shouldn't
mm-hmm.
be we shouldn't dismiss the fact that the people underneath this project have been extraordinary. But and the government's paid a lot to make it happen. I mean, like it's all over the place. But if you consider dude ushered in a new auto manufacturer.
And that's so hard to do. We've
Think
seen
about
so
how
many
much
people
capital
try.
That takes.
Yeah.
Like it's just, when have you seen that happen? And so the private sector actually found a market opportunity, made that niche into a reality now. And my sense is that even if Tesla stock gets beat up bad, right?
Mm-hmm.
It's sticking around at this
point. Oh, of course.
Like we are culturally invested in Tesla. And,
yeah.
and that's kind of my issue with, so the weird transition, it's kind of the issue with Bitcoin as well, right?
Mm-hmm.
Like Bitcoin is what people hear about, but they don't talk about the engineers behind the scenes, just like Tesla, right? Bitcoin in and of itself isn't the magic.
It's the blockchain.
It's the blockchain, the technology, some mm-hmm. of the things that are going on, and that technology is being explored and vetted and parts that are being validated or invalidated in real time as we watch. So fortunes are won and lost, and much of it is completely speculative. But my sense is that there is an actual legitimized place for blockchain technology in what we do. And make no mistake, people, we are in a world where technology is taking a larger and larger percentage of the market share of our economy. And yeah. Blockchain, like I said, it may not be Bitcoin itself, but blockchain is relevant.
I've seen so many new IPOs popping up in the last couple months, and it's a lot of it's blockchain technology and blockchain startups. They're mining, they're building warehouses to mine. I mean, it's a real thing.
It's a real thing. We are learning more about it so that we can have a more meaningful discussion on this program. This has become an area of study that I am personally learning about, not because I'm trying to rush off and advocate for it, but because I would like to better understand what's going on.
Mm-hmm.
I think there are some legitimate markets there. I think there are some gray markets. I think there are some black markets.
Oh, yeah.
And so that is the issue, is like, what's legitimate and what's illegitimate? To me, it matters, but not as much as taking our next super important profit.
Oh, David. we could go all day, couldn't we?
Oh, there's so much more to discuss. We're going to come back, and here's what I want to talk about when we come back. You know what? We got all these billionaires out there, and people are talking about how maybe they need to pay their fair share. We need to explore that, but we got to take a break first. Okay. Stick around. We'll be right back. This is Dave Littlejohn.
And Matt Dixon.
We got True Wealth on News Radio 1240 KQEN.
This is KQEN Local Talk at 4 on News Radio 1240 KQEN.
All right, gang, welcome back to the True Wealth Show. We're covering turf today, right? So check out the podcast to get caught up. If you're just joining us, it's at littlejohnfs.com. And Matt, you were talking a little bit about crypto.
Yeah.
Like Tesla's going to the moon. Crypto's, like, a bunch of them are way up. You started name dropping new ones.
Mm-hmm.
How much studying of crypto have you been doing personally?
You know, I like to drop in and read on it, you know, I don't know, maybe a couple times a month. I want to try and keep up with it because I feel like it's going to be a pivotal part of what happens in our future.
Hear things like Doge or Shiba Inu or whatever the new one was, like, so what does that mean to you, first of all? Because, I think I'm getting a sense of what's going on under the hood of this crypto craze and starting to understand it more, even things like the NFT world and so forth.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm just kind of curious.
Well, you know, you mentioned the NFT thing, and mm-hmm. I was reading up on that, and there are these worlds that are being built, and you can go into this world and you can buy real estate virtually. It's like, it's not real estate, but it's an online world where you can own things. People are buying into it, and it makes sense from the standpoint that we've seen, I mean, Pokemon. Right. For example,
mm-hmm.
like, you get a Pokemon card and it has this intense value to a lot of people and they're willing to pay real money for it. I think that when you look at these alternate worlds where people are going in and buying stuff with NFTs and cryptocurrency, I think it's going to start to spread out into other areas. And I think that it's going to continue to be popular and. But where I really have my focus, and I know I'm kind of all over the place at the moment, where I really have my focus is in the actual technology of what the blockchain allows us to do, because it's really a new banking system, right? Because if I make a transaction with a blockchain and a cryptocurrency like Bitcoin, that signal gets shot to another country and to someone's computer, and then it goes to another computer, and it does that, like, I don't know, a million times. So it's untraceable. And you're outsourcing the banking process itself. And
well, you are the bank. That's the interesting thing about this. Here's what I'm understanding about crypto, and again, this is the novice, like, there's two amateurs trying to talk about it on air. That's great. The blockchain itself is the ledger that is being tracked.
Yeah.
It is distributed amongst the different computer systems out there, and those are the miners that are
curating and tracking
the blockchain, right? And so the blockchain is the history of all of the things that have occurred. And so this mining is, as it's occurring, when certain events occur in the mining process, a token is issued when a block is completed on a blockchain. And that token is what you are mining for. And the token is like what the Bitcoin represents, right? That's the token.
Yeah.
Okay. And so the different things out there, the different types of cryptocurrency are the tokens that are associated with the activity of mining or curating that blockchain. And those are the things that people are using to sort of trade around as virtual currency. The blockchain itself underneath it can do things like record information. And the idea is when a token is produced, it's has sort of an address and a validation on that blockchain of information. And so you can then take that and put it onto your own digital wallet, for example, or physical wallet that then will allow you to link to the blockchain, put it onto your personal device, and now you become the bank and you are essentially holding a vault, a digital vault, with the record of your tokens from that blockchain. And when you plug it back in and go, that blockchain will then validate and recognize your token again and allow you to exchange it around.
That's a good explanation of how that works.
Okay. So that's the technology and the question. I mean, that's the banking, quote unquote, part of it. And so anybody could create, with the right, you know, tools and resources, a blockchain technology and invent your own
currency
or your own token, right?
Yeah.
And so that's what the NFT
market
is. Non-fungible tokens are if you created original artwork or something and then made a associated token for it through or associated mark on the blockchain, right? You're validating that it's the one and only thing on the blockchain, then it becomes part of blockchain activity. Well, this is something that people can do to mine with.
Mm-hmm.
Now, my sense is that the gray and black market occurs in this NFT world. I don't know that yet, but from what I am looking at, I'm going, how do you get some 10-year-old that, you know, draws a cartoon stick figure and it sells for $10,000?
Right.
And the answer to me is probably in the form of money laundering.
Exactly.
Right.
But,
so that's probably what it's for. It's because it's essentially untraceable. You can bounce it around between holders. And then that process of integrating into the financial system is moving it around so many times that you lose track of where it came from. And then somebody pulls it out and says, well, it's just this digital token and I exchanged it for dollars. So it's legitimate now. Well, that's what my suspicion of it is. I don't know.
And I think part of that, though, is right now, the way things exist, it's really easy to make a knockoff of something, right? Like, it's really easy to fake something. But with the NFT, you're getting that one piece, and it can't be replicated because you're the sole owner. You know? And so it's a way to authenticate something.
Oh, I'm not saying that NFT doesn't have a useful purpose.
Oh, yeah.
It does. The same way your comment earlier about digital real estate, that's literally what Facebook's exploring. Facebook's wanting to change its corporate name the way Google changed from Google to Alphabet, right? We still know them as Google, but their actual legal company name is Alphabet. And Facebook wants to change its name to Meta.
Right.
Because they're looking at creating a virtual world. And I find myself thinking about the movie Ready Player One, right? And the Oasis, and this digital virtual world that existed and people played and had currency and everything else associated within that.
Yep.
And they're kind of saying, well, we want to create something like that. NFTs would exist in that land.
Yes, they would.
Right?
And lot of people doubt it, like, this isn't going to catch. Facebook isn't gearing up for this unless it's going to catch, right? Like, you're not going to rebrand everything unless you know.
Oh, it could be an epic fail. Because here's the thing
I don't
have to be aware of, right? Facebook may be right, but I'm just telling you now, and you can say that I am like old and stodgy and out of touch or whatever you want, that there are unintended consequences to baking more screen time into our day.
Oh,
that I don't believe that our brains and our biology were wired for this. And so we may be rewiring and doing things, but we also may be damaging things in ways that we don't yet understand.
Oh, I 100% agree
with
that.
So
this isn't a good thing.
How,
I don't think it's a good thing, but it's happening.
Living in virtual reality after a while, it's like that it's going to cause some parts of your brain to grow and other parts not to. And and your brain's an electrochemical machine. And you know what? You monkey with the wiring, you don't necessarily know what the unintended byproduct is of that rewiring.
Yeah.
So that's my issue, is like, careful what you wish for.
Yeah.
Right? So, but anyway, we digress. One thing we do know is that this is sort of a billion-dollar-esque idea, at least. At least.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, like Meta, like virtual reality is already making billions if you start to look at the size of the market. But when you have trillion-dollar companies competing for it, right?
Mm-hmm.
Amazon's going after it. Facebook's going after it. I'm pretty sure like Nintendo's been going after it. I mean, like all these gamers, they've been creating 3D worlds for a long time now. So creating the virtual reality space, it's here, it's happening, and there's massive, massive market applications. And
oh,
here's
for sure.
Here's another one. If you haven't heard this one, pay attention. I want to see if you've heard about this, Matt. Augmented reality.
Yeah.
Okay. So augmented reality is like what Google Glass was attempting to do originally. You put on a pair of glasses, and when you look through them, what you see is, it'd be like virtual billboards, for example.
Mm-hmm.
You could walk by a store, and if you take the glasses off, it's just a storefront. You put the glasses on, and there's a sign hanging in the window that tells you what the daily special is. And it's customized for you based on your location and your preferences.
And I noticed today when I was on, I wanted to see what the whole Meta transition looks like for Facebook. And that's one of the things that they're actually pushing. One of the top five things on that front page of their feed is the augmented reality.
Right. And we've seen the movies kind of attempt this sort of stuff. I'll even fess up to at one point. It's been about 5 years ago. I played around with the idea of developing some software. It was intended to encourage people to save, and it was also intended to encourage local companies to introduce. I'm sharing it. This is like the idea, right? Because I just don't think I'm going to get to it. So if I show it in the public domain, if you borrow this one, just like, I don't know, give me credit somehow.
Yeah, Elon Musk heard his name too many times, okay. And so he's like tuned in. Now he's going to take your idea,
well,
David.
And if he does, we'll just say, well, at least we recorded it, right? So
yeah.
We can prove it. But the concept was that local, like based on your augmented reality, it wasn't like looking through glasses, though. It's just on your phone, you could hold it up, and whatever you saw through the camera, it would then put an augmented reality on your phone screen. But if you were in a local area, local vendors, like local loyalty programs, let's say, I'm just going to fictionally say, like Sub Sandwich Joint says that they have a special, and they know that you're within 5 miles of them right now because of your geolocation, which they know this stuff. They do, right?
Mm-hmm.
And you get a notification that there's a flash sale on your favorite Sub sandwich. And so the question is, it's around lunchtime, and they just said, well, you know what? We'll give you this special sale on it if you come by. And it may incentivize you to come in at that point because you got the flash sale. But if you're walking by, other vendors would know, and they may – it's basically flash sales based on your geolocation.
That is an amazing marketing ploy.
So the whole point is to have your local vendors subscribe to the system.
Yeah.
Doesn't cost you, the end user, anything.
Right.
The vendor makes up for it because they're getting a sale. It may eat up their margin a little bit, but they're increasing their sales volume by doing this. And so it's just a subscription-based service to do real-time geolocation ads. And the thing is, you can be selective on what you offer. Your best customers can get a different offer than your not best customer.
Right.
If they're not a customer at all, you may try to get them in with an initial offer, but somebody that you get all the time. The idea was that it would really
help the brick and mortar too.
Yeah, it was a really granular way to help brick and mortar to use technology to more directly target customers. So that was the idea. You've now heard it on air because there's only like a million other ideas that I don't have time to get to. So if somebody wants to learn more about how much work we did, we had a name for it, we had a UI, we had other stuff that was interesting, you can contact me later at info@littlejohnfs.com. Wink, wink.
Hey, we've got enough listeners where you might get an email, David.
You never know. You never know. The ideas, there's no shortage. But you know what there is a shortage of?
Time.
Time. We got to take our last break, so stick around. We'll be right back. I promise we're going to talk about how we're going to tax those billionaires. We will when we come back. This is Dave Littlejohn.
And Matt Dixon.
You got True Wealth on News Radio 1240. KQEN.
This is KQEN Local Talk at 4 on News Radio 1240 KQEN.
All right, gang. Home stretch of the True Wealth Show. Dave Littlejohn in studio with
Matt Dixon.
Love it. Hey, Matt, I don't know if you've heard lately, but there is this push, and it's kind of gotten beaten down lately, but last week I was hearing a lot of this, the idea that there should be that billionaires need to pay their fair share of taxes. That's how we're going to balance the budget. You hear anything about this?
My Facebook feed gets hit with that a lot from people who are like, I can't afford a house, and it's all because billionaires don't pay their taxes. I see that all the time.
Right. So here's what was proposed. And this one, last week I had a great guest on. If you didn't, you should catch last week's podcast. Rabbi Daniel Lappin joined me and talked about sort of the morality system that underpins why people believe, you know, one economic system over another. It was fascinating to listen to him.
I'll have to go back and catch that one. I was out of cell phone range.
But the idea with billionaires is that because they are billionaires, they should pay a tax. And what's floated is a tax on unrealized capital gains. Now,
that sounds terrible.
In my opinion,
that's going to force people.
That would be catastrophic.
Yeah, that would force people to liquidate when they're not in a position to liquidate, causing more.
I think it would be catastrophic. Let's use our friend Elon as an example. Elon owns about 25% of Tesla. I'm rounding a little bit here. I think he's like 24, but let's say he owns 25% of Tesla stock. Tesla stock this year goes from $400 a share to almost $1,200 a share. And so his net worth starts at let's say Tesla's worth at the beginning of the year, $800 million.
Mm-hmm.
Or I'm sorry. Yeah, $800 million. So it's almost $1 billion.
So then it's three times higher.
So he's got $200 million net worth at the time. And then Tesla's price, it was probably higher than that, but I want the math to work, right? So essentially, Tesla goes up to its current price, and it goes from being an $800 million company to a $2 trillion company.
Mm-hmm.
And now Elon goes from being worth, you know, $200 million let me rephrase all of this so it makes sense now. An $800 billion Tesla grows to $2 trillion, and Elon's 25% goes from $200 billion to like $500 billion because of the growth, right? So people are
there's a $3 billion unrealized gain there.
Well, no, there's hundreds of billions dollars more, right? He goes from 200, 300.
Oh, 300. Billion. I thought you said three.
He's worth something like, you know, almost 300 billion.
Oh, okay.
is his actual net worth. And people are like, he can afford it. He should pay more taxes. And I would say, but careful, because let me ask you the question a different way. You own a primary residence. It's your house, and there's no other houses in the whole area that you can buy. So if you sell your house, you have to move somewhere else and be homeless. Okay, let's just start with that as our basic operating premise. So if you sell your house, you will be homeless. Now, it's discovered that underneath your house is a rare find of whatever precious resource that we want to think of. We could call it oil, but let's not say that. I mean, let's say that we actually find
blocks of gold.
blocks of gold. Okay. But you can't get the gold because it's under your house.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Your house goes from being a normal house to being worth billions of dollars. And now somebody says, well, now you have to pay taxes on that. And she said, but I can't get it and I can't sell my house, right? In fact, the only thing I really can do to access that gold is I can go to a bank and say, will you give me a loan and I'll pledge my house as collateral. So I'll use a home equity line, and you know that there's a bunch of gold under there. So if I don't pay you back, you can take my house and get the gold.
Mm-hmm.
And the bank is going to say what to you? Yes.
Yeah, like, okay,
sure.
Because
so
if
we do
you
this.
Default, we're going to be rich.
As long as you pay the loan, We can do that. And so this is kind of the Elon Musk story is, hey, Elon, your net worth is bazillions. And people are saying you should pay your fair share. And it's saying, but you have to sell it, right?
Mm-hmm.
Because Tesla isn't, like, we just showed Tesla's not even profitable until, like, the most recent year, right? It makes lots of revenue, but it doesn't make profit.
His Bitcoin investment ended up, I think,
paying off big time.
Yeah, and yeah. It was the majority of the revenue for the company. It wasn't the car sales. It was his Bitcoin.
The Bitcoin increase.
Yeah.
And so consider what that means. And you're saying, well, he needs to pay tax on it. And go, then you're
where's it going to come from?
He has to sell the stock. And mm-hmm. other wealthy people would have to sell it too. And if your answer is like, well, who cares? Well, you're taking the company that everybody loves because it's Elon Musk running it and saying he can't own it anymore. Eventually, Elon gets diluted out of his own company that he started.
Yep.
And now he's not even in charge of it. So the stock changes, it's less valuable, and it must just wrecks the whole system. So you can actually see the Tesla stock collapse in value if he gets squeezed
out of it.
And then
your money, your investment is gone.
Right, and that's it. It would affect pensions, everything. So it's just not that simple, gang. So I do not believe in a tax on unrealized gains.
Yeah, preposterous.
Anyway, we are out of time for today. Sorry we ran so long. That's it. We got to run. If you want more information, give our office a call at 541-375-0898. Until next time, this has been David Littlejohn.
And Matt Dixon.
And you got True Wealth on News Radio 1240 KQEN.
The preceding program was paid for by Littlejohn Financial Services. The opinions and views expressed may not reflect those of Brook Communications, its affiliates, or its employees.